Thando, are you making a quorum or having a quorum for the meeting? Let's check the quorum.
Yes, Chair. The meeting does form a quorum.
Promptness. Thanks. I think we should start the meeting. Good morning, honorable members. Let me welcome members and guests to the platform. The Select Committee on Education and Technology, Sports, Arts and Culture. Just bear with me a little bit. Dr. Thando, will you fly to the agenda, please? You are all welcome to the platform. Let's fly the agenda and get started. Don't remember, this is the agenda of our meeting. Are there issues with the agenda? Any mover for adoption of this?
Ndongeni moves, Chair.
Ndongeni moves. Any seconder?
Lee, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Lee. Like I've already welcomed you members to and guests to the platform. Just to say that this is the background, the Select Committee on Education and Technology, Sports, Arts and Culture of the National Council of Provinces is undergoing the public participation process of the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill, popularly known as the Bella Bill, which is B2B of 2022, which was first introduced to us on the 8th of November 2023 last year. Since the bill is a Section 76 bill, it was referred to the provincial legislatures to also embark on a public participation process in the provinces. In addition, the committee called on the individual members of the public and all interested stakeholders to provide written submissions on the proposed bill to the Select Committee. Due to a high public interest in this bill, an opportunity for interested parties to provide oral submissions over and above the submitted written submissions was held from the 6th to the 8th of March this year, 2024. However, the committee secretariat received a letter from representatives of the CAPE Forum who had requested an opportunity to make an oral presentation but were not invited to present last week. We would first like to apologize for the omission that occurred, and it is deeply regrettable. It was reported to me that the written submissions were handled by a team of researchers and content advisors, and that had to capture over 50,000 submissions. And somehow, the CAPE Forum's request for oral submission may have been missed. It is for this reason that upon receiving communication from your organization, we immediately made contact to ensure that you receive an opportunity to make an oral submission to the committee. This is important, honorable members and our guests, because we believe that you will provide valuable input on this very important bill. I would also like to reassure you that your written submission was received and captured by our parliamentary officials. We would therefore like to thank you for availing yourselves this morning, and we look forward to further hearing your input on the Bella Bill. Thank you very much. Noel Thando, who is representing the, will be presenting on behalf of the West of the Cape Forum.
It's Mr. Bernard Peters, Chair.
And that Peters. Welcome, Mr. Peters, that you are given 30 minutes to engage with the committee. After making your presentation, there will be opportunity for clarity seeking questions, and then from there will be done. Thank you very much. Let me give this opportunity to you to present your input on the Bella Bill. Thank you. Over to you, Dante.
Thank you very much, Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity. And anyone can make a mistake about fixing it shows character. So once again, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. So just to quick background. I'm Bernard Peters, manager at Cape Forum, and last week I had the chance to also do attend the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Police, and this week, attending the Bella function. So I'm also going to pull a bit on what I experienced last week later in my presentation. So today I didn't come to you as the education expert. I do have a master's in 3D reservoir computer modeling in the field of hydrogeology. So thus I'm a trained professional in understanding complex systems and identifying and addressing what the core underlying problems are, and not to mistake said problems for a symptom or a deeper hidden problem. That said, my approach today will be practical, solution-driven. I'm sure that I'm not the smartest person here in this meeting, and I don't pretend to have all the answers, nor does our organization. But I hope and believe we will find and take this first step today in a respectful and productive dialogue. You previously mentioned that you did receive our written submissions, which gave our technical arguments. So allow me today to take a different route and not bore you by repeating my analysis of the problem statements that you did receive in the written submission. My experience, Cape Forum, more than a decade of experience in community work, where my focus was and still is the identification of problems, identifying the core issues, and creating realistic, practical solutions that is a win-win scenario for all parties involved. First, I think I might be the first person to compliment the Bella Bill in identifying some of the problems in education, yet today I will focus on some of the proposed solutions in the Bella Bill and explain why we don't believe that the solutions are the correct remedies for the problems that were correctly identified. Just to confirm, you can see the PowerPoint.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can. Yes.
Okay, thank you. So I just like to make 10 points and then I'll do my closing remarks. So firstly, I'd like to focus on school safety. And I don't know if you're aware, but South Africa roughly has 250,000 people that are trafficked per year in South Africa. And as parents, I'm sure this is a personal concern we all share, a fear we all have in common, and a purpose I think we all want to solve collectively. We also have a problem with rising crime in South Africa and also lacking support for
Recording
also accommodation
in progress.
Issues at a lot of schools, and this is also something the Bellabill does not address. Then also just on electricity, lack of electricity hinders modern teaching and learning, not to mention unsafe conditions for educators that are marking papers late hours and lighting for students during tests and exam. Again, NGOs handing out rechargeable. If, for example, again, these concerns are not addressed in a practical way in the Bellabill. Then also just quickly, we're moving on to water. Water also, lack of reliable water has led to sanitary and health concerns at schools. And I again believe that is something we can all share, that our education and students should have healthy living environments and where water can also be used for irrigation, for gardens at schools that have feeding schemes. Then on that note, I'd like to add that a hungry child cannot function as well as a child that has been well fed. So we also see a huge focus on our side with regards to food security at schools, and we are busy addressing this with other NGOs like Green for Life and Apple Tree Initiatives, where we help schools create food gardens, whether it be vegetables or fruits, for them to augment their existing food feeding schemes to better to have the students access to better nutrients at school and thus also increase their performance. Again, this is something we do not see the Bellabill addressing in any practical way form. Then also quickly to the criminal justice system with regards to just a quick example in Guguletu this week, a 17-year-old girl, Ongizwe Kamlana, was murdered. And again, the safety at schools and what happens to the individuals afterwards is again something that is not approached or discussed in length at the current Bellabill. The question thus is, do teachers know and understand what their rights are? What are they able to do to help train kids, students with regards to how to live safer lives or how to be more safe in and around school? And what are the teachers and personnel at schools' legal limit to what they can do and get involved in? Again, this is something we from Cape Forum side is willing to give free online training in this field if there are teachers that are interested in this form. Again, a solution to a problem that is not addressed in the Bellabill at all. Then education, which is the main focus of today. Although we see education as a holistic function in society, and thus we have the 10 points. Getting back to point 8 with regards to education. Again, I want to convey or repeat my opening statement that the Bellabill does address and identify problems in education system, and it identifies a lot of them very well. It's just the remedies, the solutions that we'll propose, we do not agree with. For example, clause 2, compulsory grade R. I don't think you'll get a lot of people who won't agree with that, but realistically, where will the money, education, educators, location, school, transport, how will all of that logistically work? Is there a plan? We don't see that at the moment. And thus, why the idea is noble, I don't think there's a practical way to achieve it. And thus, we see this as probably a waste of money if this is to be tried to be implemented without a realistic plan. Clause 4, for example, if there were enough schools, the government won't have to want to change the law to micro-control and micromanage schools. So isn't it better to build more schools, job creation, and help create more opportunities for learners who currently have to travel very far? Again, clause 5, with regards to language, I think it's a well-established international scientific fact that mother tongue education is the best way to educate young learners. So from a scientific stance, we can't agree with clause 5. Clause 14, logistically, we don't believe that the government can control all material acquisitions of schools. No administrative force can micromanage to that degree. imagine 100 schools calling tomorrow for new toasters, for a stupid, easy example. Is that something ministers or the Department of Education should be busy with, or is that something that a school can solve on local level with a donation or a local business forum? We believe that local, smaller problems should be left at schools, at school level, at local level, to achieve it, to achieve solutions much faster, effectively, and also at no cost to the government. Then also questionable training, like at high school Fishhook here in Stellenbosch, and also lacking special needs schools, lack of decent ECD facilities, resulting in students not being ready for grade R. These are just a couple of examples, and we don't see a realistic way that Developable is trying to solve or address a lot of these and other technical issues that was in our written proposal. So just again, if we look at other NGOs, whether it is school bags for grade ones that don't, parents don't have the money, whether it is posters to explain concepts, whether it is training for the educators and working with local government, these are all things that we can do on a practical local level to solve problems without it costing the state a cent and taking 1 minute of the state's time. Then if we move on to infrastructure, just to mention, this also needs to focus, be a focus with regards to a lot of schools planning on being closed. Wouldn't it be better to upgrade a lot of these schools rather than to close them? Again, there are NGOs that are willing to work with you and national or local level to address these problems. We want to find a working, realistic, cooperative solution to these problems. And our last point before we have our closing remarks is regards to healthcare at schools. We don't all see at all a realistic approach how Bella is going to help fix a lot of the problems at schools with regards to student health, whether it be mental health, whatever. There is also not solutions trying to remedy or address these problems realistically or practically. Then I want to focus on my closing statements that school governing bodies have helped the state throughout the years, taken a lot of administrative duties away with regards to dealing with local smaller issues, like I said, buying a new toaster, microwave, unruly students. That is all locally controlled, and that has saved the government a lot of money in both monetary and time as well in human working hours. So we believe that this school system has worked, and our remedy would be to rather give and provide training to school governing bodies to better administrative, to have better administrative capabilities and develop these skills on local level, which they may be able to use in the place of work, or maybe acquire these skills through these types of training to maybe even start their own business because of what they have learned here. We see this as a huge opportunity for government, for education and skills development, starting with school governing bodies. Where school governing bodies have been successful thus far, I think they can be either used as a model, or a good teacher would tell you if a student is doing well, let him be and focus on the students who need the time. So again, these types of education and training we see is the main solution, and we think the largest positive impact that can be made on school level at the moment. Just again, I mentioned NGOs quickly earlier. Also, how will we financially replace 250,000 plus NGOs that are currently functioning in South Africa, many of them involved in school programs? How is the government planning on replacing, at least just keeping the status quo and not letting education slip any further down through excluding these NGOs and the funding, training, monetary donations they bring to schools? How are they practically going to be replaced? Or is the bill going to pass hypothetically? and with the exclusion of many these NGOs working in fields that Balabal will not be able to permit them to continue with, will the government pick up the slack? And if so, what is the plan to do that? And again, just with regards to language, I think the science is relatively well settled on that. Eastern countries that were also colonized know this, and we believe that is also one of the reasons why they are very far ahead technologically, because they understand the underlying science of make sure the young kids understand concepts so that they can quicker understand more complex concepts. And the progress that has been made with Afrikaans, isiXhosa and isiZulu, I think in many cases is perfect examples where this has on local level achieved very good results. Then cooperative, I think many of you have read the media on Cape Forum's stance, so I'm not going to sit and deny that we have said we will go to court if the Balabal is passed. We're not denying that statement, but today I'm here to say we prefer a cooperative solution to these problems. And like I said in the presentation earlier, we want to work together to find solutions. We don't have all the answers. If we have to organize workshops with other NGOs or other institutions, organizations to find realistic solutions, we are willing to do that and to help this committee on national or local level to find these solutions together. I understand that a lot of people may have already decided if they are going to support the Balabal or not, so I'm not sure how much impact the public participation will have. But my closing remark, I would just like to end with one final point. If this bill passes and all the correlating ideas that will be inferred by this law, I think that traditional rural voters will remember who told their sons to wear dresses to school. And this will cause the breakdown of the traditional family, resulting in much less marriages and also population decline. Thank you for today. My contact details you can get from the secretary. I thank you very much again for the opportunity, and we hope that we can find a collaborative approach and for you to make use of our offer and maybe test us on one of them if you're unsure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Peters. Thank you so much. The fact that when you saw that your name was not, you were not called on the first day, that you stood up, called, and wrote letters, shows your commitment to the process, to basic education in this country and its transformation. We really thank you for alerting us that your organization's opportunity to give this presentation just fell through the cracks. I'm happy that you made a follow-up and that we got to this, how are we going to know about what you are providing? So some of us will be taking you on the offer you are offering, you are giving. Thank you so much. And what will happen is that we will take questions of clarity from members. I nearly skipped that part. Are there members who would like to ask points of clarity to Mr. Peters? Because when we discuss, he won't be in our meeting.
Yes.
I'm just checking through the platform. I don't see... There's no indication of anyone who wants to ask a question. Thank you very much, Ndate. And what will happen is all our meetings are public meetings. They can be accessed on YouTube and all other social media platforms. So you'll be welcome to follow what has happened. Thanks a lot. Honourable members, will release that Peter say if he wants to go, so that we can continue with the meeting with our program. Let me. Noltando, we're going to look at the report of what happened from the first day of the public hearings and until the last day, which is today and now. I'll give over to, so that we check if there is something, if there's an omission or if there is something that was added that was not supposed to be added there, I think so. So how are we going to go about this, Noltando? We've had this report for quite some days. And usually I think the best way is to say, how are we going to deal with this? Let me just get clarity from the members.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and everyone present in the meeting. Chair, the content advisor will present the report to the committee.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so much. Thanks a lot. Dr. Mthombeni, our content advisor, the microphone is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to yourself and the honorable members and all my colleagues that are on the platform. Chairperson, this is what I'm going to do. In order not to take too much of the time, I'm just going to open a short PowerPoint presentation just to highlight a more summarized version of the report, and then I will go to the Word document of the report and talk to the clause by clause. So I will actually talk about all the contested clauses within the bill. So allow me shortly to share the screen. Okay, can honourable members see the screen on their side?
Yes, Dr. Mthombeni.
Okay, let me just do something here. Okay, so basically, upon receiving the written submissions via the email that we had specifically created for the bill, so basically, what happened is, if I can just give a short background on the bill, of course, all members know about this B2B bill that is happening, that is currently going around the country. So the draft bill proposes to amend the South African Schools Act of 1996 and the Employment of Educators Act of 1998, and so to align them with the developments in the education landscape and to ensure that the systems of learning and excellence in education are put in place in a manner that respects, protects, and promotes and fulfills the right to basic education as enshrined in the Constitution. So when we looked at the submissions, honorable members, so the email submissions in total were about 29,985. These were the email submissions that we checked at midnight of the 31st of January on the closing date. And then we also received 19,595 hand-delivered submissions to the parliamentary precinct. So in combination, there were 49,580 email and hand delivery submissions combined. And then we first look for duplicates. So when we look for duplicates, we look at the name and surname of the person, the submission made. So you'll find that one person sent four or five emails saying the same thing, exactly the same thing. We look for those submissions in order to reduce our workload. we had to first deal with the duplications. So after receiving duplications, we ended up with 38,170 submissions, meaning there was just over 11,000 duplications. So some of the notable organizations that made submissions are listed on this page. As you can see, this is not all of them. These are just some of the ones that made submissions, and these organizations in front of you are the ones that also made oral submissions last week. And then out of the 54 clauses of the bill, or of the proposed bill, there's 18 clauses that are highly contested. And you can see them in front of you. So it's clause one with regards to definitions, clause two. So yeah, so you can see them in front of you. And in the report, they are also listed as follows. So the report does not contain all the 54 clauses, but only the ones where there was objections or contestation. And then discussion. So this is just a summarized discussion. So overall, there was a mix of submitters that either supported, partially supported, or outright rejected the proposed amendments in their entirety. Where we became a bit where a lot of confusion happened, let me just call it confusion, was when a person says, I reject the bill in its entirety, but then talks to homeschooling only, or talks to the language policy only, but however does not stipulate whether they support or reject the rest of the clauses within the bill. So in that way, it was a bit difficult for us to now determine whether does this person just rejects this bill because of this one clause, or do they accept the rest of the clauses but reject just this one clause on maybe home education or language policy. And then of those that supported the bill, it was stated that the bill was supported because it would enhance organizational efficiency of the basic education system and to improve the school governance, leadership, and accountability, transforming education services and protecting vulnerable groups to ensure that learner well-being and access to learning. And then it was further stated that the bill would address challenges of deteriorating learner school performance, school dropout, misconduct in schools, malicious abuse of authority by school governing bodies, and that stifle transformation and uncertainty about the home education legislation. Of those submissions that partially supported the bill, mostly commented on the compulsory learner attendance, school starting with grade R, as this would enhance early childhood development, punishable offenses by those who disrupt school activities. However, the majority of those that partially supported the bill also objected to the definitions of corporal punishment, competent assessor, home education, and required documents. Those were the mostly contested definitions. There were objections against powers of the HOD in terms of the language and admission policy. I think if we could summarize most of the submissions, probably 80 to 90% spoke to this objection of language and admission policy in schools. There were also major objections against the regulation of home education and or its curriculum, as well as central procurement of teaching and learning materials. And there were also there was also a general feeling that the powers of the SGBs in schools were being undermined and a threat of being diminished. So the last sentence that I mentioned from the previous page and this one that I've just read out now, I think they would probably give you a perfect summary of the bill actually. And then of those that rejected the bill outright, most did not state which clauses they were objecting to, but highlighted a lack of trust in the government to implement anything positive in the education sector. So this sentence we found mostly in the short submissions that were made. Remember, we had long submissions where a person attaches a PDF document or a Word document to their email. And then there were those ones who just submitted just on their email page to say, I reject the bill because I don't trust the government to implement anything positive. So there were also a lot of those submissions. Then there was also a feeling that the government was amending the Bella bill to impose power on parents, power over parents and SGBs, tampering with the Bill of Rights. There was also objections from religious and faith-based organizations stating that the bill is against their religious principles. And then submissions not related to the specific clauses in the bill. So there were those submissions whereby we could not locate the actual submission to a specific clause in the bill. Among some of these submissions that included comments not directed at a specific clause and stated that this bill discriminates against religious communities, as I previously stated, who according to scriptures are duty bound to guide and protect their offspring and do not impose their values on others, as it was indicated that religious communities have shown to raise children who are more responsible, respective, and beneficial to society. Some submitters stated that they strongly oppose the planned covert and overt introduction of transgender ideologies under the guise of gender equality, especially at unreasonable foundation phase. And then some submissions stated that the Bella Bill promotes obscenity, immorality, violation of religious freedom, violation of individual freedoms, constitutional rights, and a whole myriad of issues. And some actually stated that the government should understand that it's not a Hitler type of... So there were very offensive emails as well that sort of showed some sort of extremism that relates to this proposed bill. So the main challenge that we faced was that there was a lot of submissions that referred to, that actually spoke to the first version of the bill that was introduced to the National Assembly Committee and not the B version. And you will see, as honorable members, that the first version of the bill and the B version of the bill are very different, as some of the clauses in the first version of the bill are not in the second version of the bill. Because when the National Assembly adopted the first version of the Bella Bill, they indicated that some of the clauses must be removed based on the public input. A simple example, the one on alcohol sales in schools, in the B version, it's not there at all. But in the first version, it was there. So many submissions submitted to the National Assembly. And because of that, some of these clauses that they were opposing, they were no longer there. So we couldn't use the information. However, we went and looked at the clauses that were still in the B version, and we took that into consideration. In fact, some of the submissions were actually addressed to Honorable Gigaba in the Portfolio Committee. They were not addressed to Honorable Ntshabeleng. But still, we still took the important information or the clauses that are still in the B version, and we factored them into the report as well. So that is the one challenge that we actually faced the most. So I'm going to take members to the clause by clause deliberations. Just do this. Just hold on. Okay. So all the members should have this report, as it was emailed to the honorable members. So basically, I'm just going to scrape through most of them so that in the so that we can actually save time as well. And then if members have any queries or any objections based on how the report was put together, please feel free to share it with us, and we will try our level best to address any concerns you might have. So basically, the definition of basic education, there was a proposal that it must be defined as pre-tertiary education and may include education in public schools, independent education, including home education, and other forms of education recognized in the legislature. And then moving on to corporal punishment. So they argued that the definition in the proposed bill is vague, and there was a suggestion that it actually reads as follows: forcing a child to do exercise other than normal exercise as per curriculum requirements, because it would look as if making children do exercises, which is also part of the physical education curriculum, would be seen as corporal punishment, where else it is not. It would be part of the school curriculum. But when you add curriculum requirements, it now clarifies where there's a gray area there. And then there was also a recommendation by various organizations that indicated that corporal punishment must be widened to include non-physical forms of punishment as defined by the UNCR, that have the potential to inflict fear or infringe upon the right of children, on the right of children to human dignity. So this includes other forms like belittling a child, humiliating, threatening, and inducing fear or ridiculing the child. And then there was also, in addition to the definition of basic education by another organization again, that these submitters were overviewed that this definition limits and simplifies basic education to a single program enforced by the institution, excluding various recognized programs and theories in education. The given definition can therefore not be in the best interest of the child. It was recommended that definition include and recognize the different approaches to education concerning home education programs as well. And then on the competent assessor, there was an opinion that in South Africa, educators in South Africa are trained according to the CAPS model of assessment and will not be able to assess the child's homeschool modules and curricula. So being exposed to CAPS assessor will defy the purpose of the assessment and discourage children. A competent assessor, according to the given definition, will not understand the goals of and model of working, and it would be fruitless, unaffordable, and a disheartening exercise. So that is just one of the submissions that was made, and there was quite a number of objections against the competent assessors that members can actually read through. And then also the issue of required documents. It was suggested that the definition of required documents in Section 1M in the insertion of subsection 4 include or a relevant court order. So that is what the suggestion was. And then also a lot of homeschoolers were also objecting to the definitions, because they were indicating that most of these definitions are not speaking to the home education sector. So yeah, and then there was also a lot of submissions under the umbrella of that actually promoted independent micro schools. And there was a submission that also the Section 1 of the SASSA must include independent schools as a means of independent schools of 135 learners or less, or deemed to be registered in terms of Section 46. And then there was a submission that inclusive education must also be included in the definitions, so that there is an understanding of inclusive education and its importance. And then now moving over to Clause 2. So basically with Clause 2, It was regards to the Great R, or the Compulsory Great R, and most of the organizations commended this amendment, and I have indicated there in the report. And there was also submissions that school should not be allowed to end at grade 9, but should call on for all the learners to go until grade 12, because there were also submissions that when a child ends school at the age of 15 or after grade 9, they are condemned to low-paying jobs with a few career prospects. Yet this creation of a pool of workers with little education hampers economic growth. So there were submissions along those lines as well. But overall, there was a great support for this Great R amendment in Clause 2. And then also, there were also some concerns that were stating that not every child develops at the same pace. So it is not in the best interest of every child to start attending school during the year in which the child reaches the age of 6. Ignoring the individual development characteristics and readiness of the child only leads to setting up the child for failure, which is detrimental to their schooling career. So they indicated that now this clause must also take into consideration the development, the different developments of children. And then I'll just move over to Clause 3. The majority of submissions propose that the Section 4A is commendable as well, and it will reduce the dropout rate, right? So this is related to monitoring learner attendance. However, the subsection 4 must be expanded to make provision for the principal or his delegate within 24 hours or reasonable time thereafter, as the 24 hours may not fall within the working day and must be extended. It was also suggested that the further intervention as suggested by the amendment be defined. And then moving over to Clause 4, let me just scroll down. So most of the submitters objected to Clause 4, Section 5, because of the amendments that states that SGB must submit to the HOD for approval of the admission policy at the school and any amendment thereof. So this was seen as an amendment that would reduce the powers of the SGB to determine the admission of policy in schools, and mostly indicated that this would create an administrative nightmare for the department, and secondly, it would take away the powers of the SGB in regulating admission policy in schools. And there were also some submissions stating that this will eventually lead to overcrowding in schools and inability of the SGB to control the running of the schools in general. So in Clause 5, most of the submissions also rejected the issue around the language policy in the schools, and they stated that the language policy is with the SGB in terms of Section 6.2 of the Schools Act. So a lot of submissions rejected the issue whereby that the SGB must, or the HOD has the final authority in determining the language policy of the school. So basically, they also indicated, just as in Clause 4, that it takes away the powers of the SGB in determining the language policy of the school. And there was also a reference to a court judgment, the MLO court judgment. A lot of submissions quoted this judgment as well, which stated that the primary function of the SGB is to look after the interests of the schools and its learners, and it is meant to be a beacon of grassroots democracy in the local affairs of the school. Ordinarily, the representatives are parents of learners and of the local community and are better qualified to determine the medium best suited to impart the education in all the formative and utilitarian cultural goodness that comes with it. So a lot of reference was made to this judgment, and there was also submissions that also indicated that this was a deliberate target to African medium schools. And there were also extreme submissions that also stated that this is part of the state trying to take away Afrikaans from the schools. So they indicated that this bill is actually a threat to the language of Afrikaans within schools. There were those submissions as well. And then also, yes, there were also the submissions that indicated that the undesired consequences will include excessive dominance by national and provincial education departments, thereby undermining the grassroots democracy model for school governance under the Schools Act, despite the Constitutional Court's warning against such. An adverse impact on the quality of education achieved through the tripartite partnership model. And then there was also a submission that permanent alienation of a significant portion of the school and communities. And then there would also be an exodus from the public school system to private institutions. So those are some of the concerns that were raised, and a lot more as you read through the report. And then in clause 7, so clause 7 seeks to amend section 8 of the Schools Act by providing the code of conduct within the public school to make provision for the exemption clause, making it possible to exempt learners upon application from complying with the code of conduct or certain provisions thereof on just cause show. So there was a problem with the just cause and wording. So they indicated that this one, just cause, is simply too wide and may lead to frivolous applications for exemption. It means that the governing bodies must meet to consider and deliberate on these applications, react to them within a reasoned manner, and come to a rational decision. So just cause should be replaced by religious, cultural, or medical grounds. And then there was also a lot of submitters that indicated that this amendment would actually, as quoted, the code of conduct must contain the exemption provision in terms of which a learner or the parent of a learner may apply to the governing body for exemption is unacceptable. The code of conduct cannot contain certain portions of the exemption, as this will create a gray area for the execution of disciplinary measures. There should also be no exemption. The learner and parents have the freedom to choose which school they wish to apply to, and therefore can, or before enrollment of a minor child, peruse the code of conduct, and based on that, decide whether they can comply with the code of conduct. If not, they should not enroll at a school. Most of the submitters also who supported this amendment of Section 8 indicated the Constitution of the Republic and the SASA must be considered when the public school adopts the code of conduct. And then moving on to Clause 8, which is quite short, the majority of submissions indicated the proposed amendment of Section 8, as the onus on the principal is reckless and severe. A principal or any other person for that matter is not allowed to drive around with a dangerous object or illegal drug under any circumstances. Therefore, it would be prudent to state that the principal secures it on the premises and awaits the South African Police Department to collect the same. So basically, this now leads to when they find dangerous weapons on the school premises, handing over to the principal of the school. And then in clause 9, the proposed amendment of section 9 of the Schools Act states that the suspension may only be enforced after a learner has been granted reasonable opportunity to make representations. The submitters opine that the list of serious misconduct offenses as defined in the Act lists certain acts of misconduct that would justify immediate suspension. It was therefore suggested that the Act be expanded to make provision for temporary suspension for certain acts until a formal hearing can take place. There was a request for clarity to be provided on what constitutes serious acts of misconduct by learners. And then clause 13. So in this clause, submitters indicated they are uncomfortable with the proposed amendments of section 13 of the Bella Act regarding the merger of schools, as it does not explicitly state which schools must be selected for merge, and suggest that only schools that show close proximity or geographic proximity can be selected for merger. And then in clause 14, the majority of the submissions objected to the proposed section 21.3a of the Bella Bill, which proposes amending section 21 of the SASA, introducing provision that enables the HOD to centrally procure identified learning and teaching support material in schools. And basically in this one, there were submissions that this would be problematic because it provides a means for summarily circumventing and carefully balanced allocation of functions of the SDB and HODs for procurement. And secondly, this amendment will imply that the department centrally procure LTSM for schools. And given certain provincial departments' incapability to deliver books to schools, there is a concern that the provincial departments will not have the capacity to deliver the learning material on time. In practice, this amendment can be very problematic, and the proposed subsection must be deleted. Of the submissions that supported the central procurement of LTSM, it was suggested that the centralization of large-scale procurement will help save costs, support local procurement, and prevent corruption. However, it was stated that the necessary measures be put in place to ensure that such procurement is transparent and not abused. And then in clause 19, on this one, it states that section 25 of the Schools Act makes provision for the HOD to dissolve a governing body where it has ceased to perform functions allocated to it, or has failed to perform one or more such functions. So the submitter's main concern about this proposed amendment is the power granted to the temporary or interim SGB in section 25.2. The main concern about these proposed amendments is the power granted to the temporary or interim school governing body on the proposal, and the power granted to the temporary governing body appears to be more extensive than intended, as it grants the temporary or interim governing body exclusive voting rights and decision-making powers of any function that they have been appointed to perform. The granting of exclusive decision-making powers arguably ousts the powers of the HOD and minister, thereby undermining carefully crafted checks and balances, as well as accountability mechanisms in the Schools Act. It was also stated that the difficulty of the proposed amendment lies in the periods of extension afforded to the HOD, who can extend the total period of the interim governing body to a year. Therefore, it was suggested that the underlying democratic principles of the election of the governing body should be restored as soon as possible after the dissolution of the existing governing body, and the period of the governance by the interim body should not be longer than 3 months. Within the period the election of the new governing body should take place. And then in clause 21, so it's about the paragraph 21 of the Bella Bill referring to the proposed amendment of section 27. The majority of submitters indicated that members of the governing body should be reimbursed for reasonable expenses incurred for the attendance of meetings and school activities. Per the current amendment, it is stated that there may be no remuneration, but reference must be made to the reimbursement of expenses incurred by members in the fulfillment of their duties. And then in clause 23, a proposed amendment of section 29 of the Schools Act states that where reasonably practical, only a parent of a member of a governing body who is not employed by the school, by a public school, may serve as the chairperson of the finance committee of the public school. Most submitters objected to the amendment and indicated that it should not only when reasonably practical, but always be a parent member, as the decisions made by the chairperson of a finance committee have a huge financial impact on the school and should not be left in the hands of an educator. And then in clause 25, submitters objected to the clause in light of the shortage of school facilities and the failure of government to provide adequate sanitation at rural schools. Determinations to merge and close smaller schools by government are provided for. The proposed amendment to close down smaller schools will likely increase the distance of learners have to travel to reach a school and result in an increase in the cost of transport for parents sending their kids or children to schools further away from home. So the submitter stated that this may even result in children not attending schools, all due to the distance required that they are required to travel. Such smaller schools, home and private schools are normally better run, better disciplined, and produce better results, as the submitter suggests. The best interest of a learner principle will be violated by forcing learners from smaller schools who learn in safer environments, which is conducive to success, into failing education system characterized by overall lack of resources, rampant drug and alcohol abuse, poor learner to teacher ratios, violence and intimidation, teenage pregnancy, theft, sexual assault perpetrated by learners and even teachers, high failure rates, and all these other issues. So it was recommended that instead of closing down smaller schools and spending billions to implement grade R, rather allow for micro and cottage schools to operate. And then in clause 26, most submitters objected to the proposed amendment of section 36, whereby the proposal that no school may enter into a loan or lease agreement without the written consent of a member of the executive council as completely impractical. They indicated that schools from time to time take out leases. For example, if a school wishes to take out a lease of a photocopier, such a school will first have to obtain written approval from the MEC, which may cause delays in receiving feedback and approval and create a lot of admin work. Therefore, it was suggested that for practical purposes, permissions should be granted for certain loans and leases and the limitation on the amount may be suggested. And then clause 27, submitters propose that section 37 be highly amended to allow for the minister and not the HOD to determine the direction under which the SGB must establish and administer school funds by the School Act, along with their comments on the Bella B. It was suggested that the department review its funding model for schools. This includes quantiles, funding models for schools, and fee exemption tables, as well as its current staffing model. The current models inherently have as the point of departure that all schools are single medium institutions. They should not sufficiently take into account additional costs, resources, staffing, and staffing required to offer more than one medium of instruction. It was stated that there is an urgent need for a new funding model for and staff complement for multi-language schools. And then in section 28, most submitters objected to the clause which proposed that if a governing body finds it necessary to deviate from the initial budget as approved by subsection 2, the deviation will be 10%. The deviation will be 10% or more of the budget, or reallocate funds for the use of the purpose different from to that it is. Oh, sorry about that. I think there is a bit of a spelling error there. So what they are arguing that when there's a deviation of 10% or more, a parents' meeting must be convened. And they opine that this will create an unnecessary work for the SGB, and it will make it difficult for SGB to act timeously in order to reallocate funds for different purposes. So such measurements deemed completely impractical, as the school governing body will be in no position to manage the school's finances effectively. So apologies for that, honorable members. I will fix this grammar issue in this paragraph, and then we'll resend the amended report. So in relation to clause 32, many submitted objected to the proposed amendments of section 43 of the Act 84 of 1996, as amended in section 10 of the Act 31 of 2007 refers. They indicated that the burden that is placed on the governing body to submit quarterly financial statements is onerous and impractical to the governing body, and in any event will encumber the already heavily burdened bureaucracy as well. It was suggested that the status quo of the submission of annual statements be maintained. And then in clause 34, so clause 34 seeks to amend section 48 of the SASA to provide that the subsidy granted to an independent school be made subject to the conditions determined by the MEC. The amendment also provides that an independent school must submit quarterly reports to the HOD of all income and expenditure relating to the subsidy, and must within 6 months at the end of each financial year provide the HOD with a copy of audited financial statements relating to the subsidy. The proposed amendment, which seeks to create certainty regarding the reporting and to promote open and transparent accounting for the sake of financial accountability when dealing with financial public funds. Oh, sorry about that. Let me just go back. So most of the submitters objected to the proposed amendments of clause 34 because they believe that the submission of quarterly reports, apart from the annual audited financial statements, that the governing body would have to submit that the governing body would have to submit will place a financial and administrative burden on the governing body and the school's resources. The provision, if retained, must be individualized to instances where sufficient reasons exist for such reports. Schools already submit audited financial statements annually, and if this clause were to apply exclusively to schools that did not submit their annual audited financial statements in the previous 2 years, or schools that did not receive qualified audits two years in a row, then the acceptance of this clause would be warranted. The additional administrative burden is again placed on the school, and the concern that educators will have to withdraw from classes to attend to these proposed reports. And then in clause 35, this is probably one of the most contested areas of the bill. I'm not going to delve too much into the details because it's actually quite a long submission. But however, this is the one that relates to the regulation of homeschooling. And there was just a lot of organizations, a lot of individuals, a lot of parents that are conducting home education who indicated that they are against any form of regulation of home education. Even though it was amended from the previous version of the bill, there are still a lot of objections as it relates to section clause 35 that speaks to home education. So they indicated that their parental rights have been taken away, their rights to educate their children in a way that suits their own individual needs. It's against the freedom of choice. So there is just a lot of submissions around the issue or around the home education. And I think the department will need to pay particular attention to this one. And then there were also recommendations that talk to more research that needs to be done around home education, as there's a lack of understanding by government on home education. And then there's also requests that, especially under the Pestalozzi Trust, that speaks to issues relating to home education. So I'm not, for the sake of time, I'm not going to delve into that. And then I will move straight to clause 39. So in clause 39, there was a lot of submissions made under the umbrella of the African Christian Democratic Party. A lot of them actually were supporting the recommendations of the ACDP. And there was issues that relates to that there were submissions actually that actually indicated that this clause will increase rape cases in schools, teenage pregnancy, and there's actually a lot of objections that speak to actually this clause. And then there were, I will just go to the key recommendations as well, and that talks to comprehensive legislative reform, which talks to a more dedicated or the more sacred way of dealing with learner pregnancy, focusing on family and community, conscience protection in education, which was highlighted. Diverse and localized approaches on these issues, and then also a lot of other recommendations, which for the sake of time, I will not dwell on to that. And then in clause 35, there was just one submission that stated that there needs to be a clarity on why the other department was inserted in this section 9. And then section 49 also, it was just one submission that stated that the proposal be confined to state employees as opposed to government appointed educators. And then in clause 50, also there was a submitted opinion that this clause encroaches on the powers of provinces, as these matters are more appropriately dealt with at a provincial level. And then I did indicate in my presentation that there were submissions that were not related to or that were not associated with any clause. And I did summarize them nicely in the PowerPoint version. So I'm not going to dwell on that as well. And then there were also clarity seeking questions that were derived from the presentations that were done during the oral presentations last week. So based on what the organizations highlighted, there were clarity seeking questions that were formulated that the department would need to respond to the members on. So I think I will just stop there with regards to this report. There was quite a number of grammar issues that I picked up in the report, and I promised and reassure members that I will go back and re-look at the entire report with the assistance of my colleagues as well. And then we will actually improve on this report on a daily basis and resend it to members until this report is finally adopted by members. I thank you for this presentation and for your attention. Over to you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I've concluded.
Adin Chabiling.
I wasn't cut off, actually. The mic was frozen. Thank you. That's the presentation by the researcher, honorable members. As he said, that there are instances where the I's have to be dotted and the T's to be crossed. Let's not be worried about those. They will be done. But if a member feels that there is something that they feel that it's not written properly, I think they also can do that and raise issues. Thanks for this elaborate report, the summary, and all the clauses, clause by clause, that you took us through in terms of what the presentations that were made in the public hearings, the public participation processes. Members, yes. A report of what happened during the public participation. I'll wait, hence, if members would like to comment. Just a report of what had expired from the first day of the public participation processes. I'm not seeing any hands. The report is so clear. May I ask members who wants to recommend that we adopt this report as a true reflection of what took place during the Benapin hearing? Any mover?
Ndongeni chemos for the adoption of the report.
Dongeni moves any second.
Ntsube seconded the adoption chairperson of the committee.
Ntsube second. And in the absence of any other matter on this report, we'll take this opportunity to say thank you to the team, the select committee team, for making this, for collating this information and writing in, writing it in such a way that it becomes very user friendly and accessible to all the members and also the public. Thank you so much. Nultando, may we move to the next item on the agenda?
Yes, Chair, the next item is consideration and adoption of minutes.
Yeah, will you slide the minutes, please? That's minutes of the 28th of February. Any comment on this minutes? We have had them for quite some time, I know. Yeah, that's the minutes. Any comment on the minutes?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes as true reflection. Thank you.
Honorable Ngosi moves. Any second?
I second, Charlie.
Honorable seconds. Thank you very much. Another pair of minutes. Yeah, Wednesday, the 6th of March. Minutes of the 6th of March. Any comment on the minutes? We have had them for quite some time. No comment. Any mover? Any mover for adoption?
I move, Chair, Honorable Ngosi. Thank you.
Honorable Ngosi moves. Any second?
Honorable Ndongeni second, Chair.
Ndongeni second. Thank you very much. May we have another? Yeah, minutes of the 7th of March, Thursday the 7th. Tell the minutes on the platform. Any comment? None. Anyone who wants to move for adoption of the minutes?
Zuya moves, Chairperson, to adopt the minutes.
Ntsube moves. Any second?
Ndongeni seconds, Chair.
Ndongeni seconds. Thank you very much. Nultando, we still have another
One more, Chair.
The last one, the answers. This record of the 8th of March, the 8th of March, 2024. There are the minutes for everybody.
Excuse me.
Any comment on the minutes, matters? Thank you very much. Any mover? I don't see any objection to this minute or any comment. Is there any mover for adoption of this record?
Ndongeni moves, Chair.
Ndongeni moves. Any second then? Any second?
Nzube second, Chairperson.
Is there any second?
Yes, Chairperson. Nzube second adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. Nzube second. So that the last minutes on the agenda. Is there any other matter?
No, Chair, there's nothing else.
Okay. Yeah, in the absence of any other matter, I will declare this meeting closed until we meet next week. Thank you. Thank you, honorable members, for availing yourselves. And yeah, thank you. Thank you again. This meeting is adjourned. Bye, thank you.